step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. 911, what are you reporting? I got a strange going on out here. Something just killed my dog.
Something killed your dog?
My dog went flying through the air over the tree. I don't know how it did it.
Okay.
Damn it, I'm really confused. All I saw was my dog coming over the fence, and he was dead when she hit the ground. I didn't see any cars. All I saw was my dog coming over the fence.
What are you reporting?
We got someone or something crawling around out here.
Did you see what it was?
It was. It was standing up. I'm out here looking through the window now and I don't see anything. I don't want to go outside. Jesus Christ, you better...
Sure.
See ya.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Hey everybody, this is Les Stroud. Yes, yes, I know, a.k.a. Survivor Man. And you're listening to Brian, Sasquatch Odyssey.
Hey guys, and welcome back to Sasquatch Odyssey. Thank you guys so much for clicking play. I hope you guys are having a great week. We've got an amazing show lined up for you, but as always, I want to start out by inviting you. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. You can get me at brian@paranormalworldproductions.com. Head over to the website, check it out. You can become a member there and help support the show. It's been a while since I've done any story time, so I wanted to bring you a couple of articles and some stories that I found really compelling that I've been reading over the last couple of weeks. I've included an article about the thylacine, or the Tasmanian tiger, that most of us have heard about. By most all accounts, they went extinct back in the 1930s. Some people think even before then. But I found this really compelling because most of you are saying, well, why would you read an article about a thylacine or a Tasmanian tiger on a Bigfoot show? Well, I think there's a lot of correlations between the two. If you listen to the article and how they look at eyewitness encounters, it's very similar to Bigfoot. So I wanted to include it in this, and there's a couple of really cool stories that I read here as well. So I hope you guys enjoy it, and I certainly want to hear your stories. There's a button on the website under the About Me section that says leave me a voicemail. You can go over there, click that button, record directly from your phone or your computer, and it comes directly to me where you can leave your story up to 5 minutes at a time, and you can record as many of those as it takes for you to tell your story. And if you want to hear it on the show, head over there right now, ParanormalWorldProductions.com, and tell me your story. Or you can always email it to me, Brian@ParanormalWorldProductions.com. If you wouldn't mind, take a couple of seconds to rate and review the show wherever you're listening, and please make sure you follow us on Instagram at Sasquatch Odyssey. But enough of that, I know you guys are ready to get into the show. I'm ready to go, so I'm going to stop talking. You guys sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Man says Bigfoot came to steal his bacon slab. It just wanted the bacon. I and my father were working doing drywall in Boynton Beach, Florida. We had just finished a job and came back into the office for a new assignment. Frank told us that he had a, quote, special job, and he would consider it a favor if we would do it. The developer of Boca Chica had a couple of hunting cabins in the Everglades, and it wouldn't take us more than a couple of days. We would have to camp there overnight, since it was too far to drive and there wasn't any lodging around. Now, my wife was over 7 months pregnant, and I wasn't crazy about doing the job. However, Frank was persuasive. If you want to continue working for me, you'll do it. I didn't have health insurance, and I was making payments to Bethesda Hospital in advance for my wife's upcoming hospital stay. So I caved in and took the job. The next day, we packed up some camping gear in the station wagon. My idea of camping was a state park or a KOA camp. So we set off. The directions were simple. Take the Florida Turnpike south and go west on Alligator Alley. About halfway across, you'll see a gravel road to the left. Pass it and take the next gravel road to the left. The work site would be halfway between Alligator Alley and the Tamiami Trail. Looking back, I would say this would have put us in Collier County, Florida, at the beginning of the Everglades. We traveled for miles and miles under the hot sun on Alligator Alley, and for what seemed miles and miles of miles and miles. Coming to the second gravel road, we turned left and traveled more miles and miles down a washboard gravel road. I had packed some fishing gear and a .22 caliber Magnum pistol with a holster and two .30 caliber M1 carbines. A canal ran parallel to the road, and I had at least wanted to get my hook wet. So I talked him into stopping for about 15 minutes or so to stretch our legs, and I dropped a line into the canal. It was full of alligator gar, and they were stacked up like cordwood. My father spotted a water moccasin on the bank, and I took out my .22 Magnum and aimed it behind the head, and shot its head clean off. We started up again and went many more miles until we saw a sign for the site. We arrived in the early afternoon. The two cottages turned out to be two houses, each identical and two stories high. The developers had a drive made by dumping a pad of coarse gravel, about 2.5 to 3 feet high, about 300 yards back into the swamp. At the end and right of each drive was a big square of gravel the houses were built on. This was going to be more than a two-day job. We started taping the houses. While I was working, I could hear something rummaging around out in the bush. I couldn't see anything, but there was a strong odor, similar to a pig farm next to my grandfather's house in Ohio. The area was known to have wild boar, so I just assumed that's what it was. We worked until dark and cleaned up and packed up our tools. I had Dad start a campfire on the part of the drive that went past the house. I set up our cots and put on my holster with my .22 just in case the boars decided to charge us. Dad decided to start cooking a slab of bacon. One thing about Dad, he's a master chef when it comes to rough grub. We ate bacon and beans and home fries and sat around the fire talking. The whole time, I kept hearing the rummaging around in the Everglades. The sound seemed to be getting near. It occurred to me that if it were a wild boar or anything as large as the sounds indicated, the .22 Magnum I was carrying wouldn't be too effective. So I decided to go get one of the carbines. As I stood up and started to go to the wagon, I turned around to see two eyes staring about 20 feet away. At first, I thought it was an owl, but then I realized what I was looking at, and I froze in my tracks. Next thought, it had to be a bear. Only I was staring level at its eyes. It was on a gravel pad about 2.5 to 3 feet higher than I was. I'm 5'6". My God, this thing had to be at least 8 to 9 feet tall. My hand went for my gun. I drew it, and I was going to fire. Only I realized that if I shot this thing, I was only going to piss it off. Also, it wasn't acting threatening. It was just watching. It had a face more like a human than a bear or an ape, much closer to an Australian aboriginal. I could also see its skin. It didn't have thick fur. The hair was sparse with long and wispy-like strands. The hair was more like an orangutan. Only these things I would put together later. At the time, I was just plain scared. As a Vietnam veteran with a Purple Heart, I wasn't over-scared either. Let's just say I had a strong sense of self-preservation. I made a beeline for the house and momentarily thought about stopping to get the carbine from the wagon. However, my feet took me into the house and up the stairwell. My dad was hot on my heels. I went to the window which faced the campfire. As I looked out the window, I asked Dad, who was across the room, "Did you see that?" He said, "No." I said, "Then what the heck are you running for?" He said, "I saw you draw your gun and then didn't shoot and then run off. I figured you had a good reason." I told him, "We need the carbines. You got to go out there and get them, and I'll cover you." But he wouldn't do it. Still looking out the window, I noticed that we'd left a slab of bacon on a log near the campfire. Then I saw it come out of the brush. I told Dad, "There it is. Come over here and look at it." But he wouldn't do it. I don't know if he could have got across the room in time anyway. It crossed into the viewable area maybe 100 feet in just a few strides. As it walked, it scooped up the slab of bacon. It didn't really bend over. It just dropped one shoulder slightly. It was walking upright the whole time. I might add, it was walking, not running. It was casually strolling as if it didn't have a care in the world. It dawned on me that this thing didn't mean any harm. It just wanted the bacon. Anyway, I went to the wagon and got the carbines. Even though I wasn't sure what I saw, and I concluded that it didn't mean any harm, I wasn't taking any chances. I told Dad that we were going to take 2-hour watches. He decided to sleep first. I woke him up in 2 hours and told him to awake me in another 2 hours. I woke up in the morning, and he was fast asleep. Whatever it was could have had us, if it wanted to. The doors had not even been installed on the cabins yet. I went out and looked for tracks. Nothing on the gravel. I didn't expect any. I climbed down onto the ground. I thought it would be soft, but it was dry and there was a thick pad of pine needles. There were a few scruffed places, but the distance between them looked way too far to be footsteps. I thought about venturing out to look for the soft spot, but at the time I wasn't trying to prove anything but to myself. If my dad hadn't been such a chicken and had seen it, then I would be more resolved to look further. Only now I was beginning to wonder if I'd imagined the whole thing. I really didn't make the connection until a few weeks later after I came home and there was a newspaper article about Sasquatch sightings in the area I had been in. I just made a mental note to ask if any circus or zoo animals had escaped in that area, and if so, I would call and tell them what I saw. I'm not relating this encounter to make you a true believer. At the time, I know I saw something, and this is a report on what I thought I saw. After 28 years now, I question it myself. The more the time passes, the sketchier the recollection is. I only offer this record in hopes that it might help those who are seriously looking for it. I have one reservation. If this creature is real, and it is found, would that doom it to extinction? Man calls police after stumbling upon a sleeping Sasquatch in the brush behind his home. I had been helping some neighbors with a repair, and since I don't drive anymore, they took me home. It was about 2 p.m. on December 26th, 2012. The car had several people in it when they dropped me off. I was up on my porch getting my keys out to open the front door when I heard screaming coming from the car that was still in the driveway. Wondering what they were arguing about, I turned to look at them. And I saw that they were frantic, pointing to the back of my yard. I turned to look to see what they were pointing at, and when I saw a very large, hairy, upright form crossing a little cut in the brush at the back of my lot. There were 3 deer with it, 2 in front and 1 behind. That seemed strange. The deer were unconcerned. We have a huge population of deer here. I knew immediately what it was. A Bigfoot. I noted a tree limb that was even with its head. 1 step, and it was gone. I went out there and marked the limb where its head had been with a piece of white rag. The next week, on January 3rd, around 2:30 p.m., I was out in the backyard of my property with the loppers. I was cutting a trail through the thick brush so that I could get to the next street easier. There are some narrow deer trails, and I was on one of those. I smelled something really bad. It was like a ripe garbage can. I made my way in that direction, clipping the branches, when suddenly I saw something on the ground, and about 6 to 8 feet in front of me. At first, I couldn't see what it was, and then it moved. I was frozen in fear. I'm on oxygen, and I knew I couldn't run. This thing rose to its hands and knees. It was hairy and brown with a silver gray on its back. It reminded me of a giant pile of steel wool. I thought it was a bear at first. It was supporting itself on its right hand and knees. The left hand was off the ground. It turned its head and upper body and looked at me. My fear level was at a 10. I dropped my loppers without moving. He then looked away from me, shifting its weight to its left hand. He brought his right hand up in front of him and rubbed his thumb and fingers while he was looking right, then forward, as if he were reasoning out which way to go. Then he looked back at me, but his expression changed, and my fear level dropped. He looked intelligent. After a few seconds of considering what to do, he took off in the direction he was facing, straight ahead. On all fours, he slithered along the ground, going under limbs and up a little rise about 15 feet. Then I saw him stand up momentarily, and then he ducked down and darted away to the right. It was at that moment that I decided to run. To heck with the consequences. I made it back to my yard and about halfway to the house when I collapsed. After resting, getting my breath, and collecting my wits, I went back there. I found what I think is a handprint, and I placed a bucket over to preserve it. After thinking things over, that next evening, I called the police. Two officers were there within minutes. They arrived at 6:30 p.m. They were very reassuring. They said not to worry and to just tell them what happened, as they see strange things all the time. I told them what happened. They stayed with me for a couple of hours. They did not make fun of me and were supportive and reassuring. Stay tuned for more Sasquatch Odyssey. We'll be right back after these messages.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
A look back at Western New York Bigfoot sightings. The legend of Yeti or Bigfoot stretches back to the time before recorded history in North America, and despite many fantastic claims that eventually have been proven to be or admitted to be hoaxes, the unexplained elements of some stories are enough to capture the imagination. At least three times over the last several decades, Western New Yorkers have made the front page of newspapers with their claims of close brushes with ape men in the Wild Batavia, Newfane, and Clarence. Batavia's Bigfoot, 1960. Batavia's Daily News was skeptical, but still ran a big photo of an 8-inch footprint left by a mystery beast under the railroad bridge of the Tonawanda Creek near Walnut Street on a summer night in 1960. Well, it wasn't a ghost, that's for sure, because it left footprints, reported the Daily News. And what tracks? 8 inches long. But if it wasn't a ghost, then what was it? As Donald Pallone, age 15, and a few of his friends crossed the bridge one night, they heard a loud, terrifying, banshee-like screech resounded from the area of the creek below. Batavia police were joined by state troopers and following up on their tail of returning with lanterns to find a large, shadowy figure under the bridge. It was too dark to tell what it was, young Donald told the paper, but they could tell that it was fairly large as it scrambled out into the murky water. The only evidence cops found of the beast were a few giant footprints, which were photographed by a newspaper photographer who had joined in the hunt. The skeptical excitement turned to eye-rolling when the next night someone painted similar footprints leading up to the steps of the Batavia City Hall. "Who are they trying to kid?" asked one cynic in earshot of the Daily News reporter. Newfane's Bigfoot, 1980. Peter Filicetti, a part-time Newfane police officer, had spent 4 years investigating the beast he says he first encountered while picking some corn for dinner. He didn't see it, but he saw the three-toed footprints left behind, and he heard it. "It makes a screaming sound," he said as he lit his cigarette. "I swear it'll make every hair on your body stand on end. It sounds just like a woman being murdered. It's terrible." On March 3, 1980, the above-the-banner headline in the Courier Express read, "Officer has photos of Niagara County Beast," with the story headlined, "Bigfoot?" It's supposed to be between 5 foot 6 inches and 6 feet tall and weighs between 300 and 350 pounds. I hesitate to call it a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch. I just don't know really what to call it, Filicetti told the Courier Express. The photos were of animal remains found by hunters. Dogs later ran off with a rotting head and feet of some creature, possibly a large fanged bear. But Filicetti was convinced he photographed the remains of a creature that had been spotted around Lewiston for the two previous decades. At a forum where the facts of the case were discussed, UB professor Paul Kurtz called the whole thing pure fantasy, guessing the remains were those of an illegally poached bear. But a West Coast Sasquatch expert in attendance wasn't so sure. At a meeting in the Village Fire Hall, John Eric Bechtard, director of the Seattle-based Project Bigfoot, offered up a jar of glop, which he said just might contain hair and skin from the creature. There's no reason why you can't have Bigfoots in western New York, said Bechtard. 60% of New York State is woods or secluded off-limit areas like military bases, Love Canal, and chemical companies. All I know is that there have been a lot of new spotlights added into the backyards at homes in the town over the past 3 or 4 years, said Filicetti in 1980. People in Lewiston know there's something out there. A lot of them have seen it or heard it. Clarence's Bigfoot, 2006. Mackie Becker's article in the news caused an international stir. She reported it was likely a jokester in a monkey suit, but also that Hans Mobius swears up and down that he saw and photographed a bizarre beast covered from head to toe with dark hair that walked on two legs near a patch of dense woods on his 100-acre horse farm in Clarence. I don't want to come across as a nutcase here, Mobius said, as he explained that he was going to a remote part of his 100-acre farm to photograph an area that he wanted to clear, only to come across what he said was a confused-looking creature that zigzagged as it loped into the forest. Jeff Meldrum, an assistant biological sciences professor at Idaho State University, barely looked at the photo before telling Becker it was a fake. It's obviously a man in a suit, said Meldrum. Look at the forearms. There's not natural taper at the wrist. It looks like a sleeve transitioning into a glove. Still, weeks later, a 7-person investigative team came to Clarence from California and used thermal imaging to catch a 6 to 8 foot tall humanoid creature in the woods. The crew from Searching for Bigfoot, Inc. also made claims of having communicated with the beast using tree knocking, which they described as the preferred method of Bigfoot communication. The final word on the Mobius sighting, however, likely goes to the clerk at the longtime Buffalo costume retailer George & Company, who admitted to selling a gorilla suit only weeks before the incident. That same clerk also positively identified Mobius as the buyer. In July of 2019, Australian authorities on the island of Tasmania received a report of a footprint spotted by an unnamed individual on a walk up to the Sleeping Beauty Mountain in the southeastern part of the state. He wasn't able to take a photo. However, when he got home, he Googled it and believed that it was a Tasmanian tiger, according to the Tasmanian Department of Primary Industries, Parks, Water, and Environment. That same year, a government plant biologist saw what he believed to be a Tasmanian tiger, or thylacine, from 30 meters away in a remote area. Good description given, bounded into bush, the report states. In 2018, 3 cyclists said they witnessed a thylacine crossing the road in front of them. These are just 3 of the more than 1,200 alleged thylacine sightings reported between 1910 and 2019 in Tasmania that have been collated and analyzed by Barry Brook, a mammal ecologist at the University of Tasmania, and colleagues to create the Tasmanian Thylacine Sighting Records Database, which they used to estimate an extinction date for the thylacine. Their findings, released in preprint format in January through the BioArchive and undergoing peer review, indicate the iconic Australian marsupial predator most likely died out in the late 1990s or early 2000s, decades later than has been assumed. The results surprised even Brook. Contrary to expectations, the inferred extinction window is wide and relatively recent, spanning from the 1980s to present day, with the extinction most likely in the late 1990s or early 2000s, the paper says. While improbable, these aggregate data and modeling suggest some chance of an ongoing persistence in the remote wilderness of the island. Contrary to expectations is arguably an understatement. The thylacine was declared extinct by the IUCN in 1982. Officially, the last known living thylacine died in 1936 in Hobart Zoo. But as the database compiled by Brooks and his team shows, evidence for its continued survival emerges every year, Most of these reports are likely to be cases of mistaken identity or outright fabrications, but Brooke took this into account in his modeling. He and his team assessed each reported sighting according to its likely veracity, and then used the probabilities to estimate when the thylacine is most likely to have died out. The Sleeping Beauty sighting, for instance, was rated a 2 out of a possible 5, meaning it was given little chance of being true. The other two both received a 4. The first because it was made by a scientist, and the second because more than one person was involved. Both factors that reduced the possibility of the reports being outright lies, or that the observers mistook another species for a thylacine. The records of an average Joe who might have seen one are given about a 1% probability of being correct, Brooke said during a Zoom interview. Whereas someone like a park ranger or in the earlier days, bushmen and trappers, would both have had a much better chance of getting it right and were given about a 25 or 50% probability of being right. Brooke's data suggests that if thylacines do or did survive until 20 or so years ago, then they are or were most likely holding out in the western or southwestern portions of the island. Areas such as the Franklin Gordon Wild Rivers National Park and the broader Wilderness World Heritage Area are extremely inaccessible, and Brooke says it's plausible that a few individuals could be there without being detected. And though this region wouldn't be optimal habitat for thylacines, it's clear that paddy melons, a small, chunky, kangaroo-like marsupial of the genus Thylogale and wallabies, known from old accounts to be their favored prey, live there in sufficient numbers to support populations in reduced densities. Other studies looking at the likely survival of the thylacine have come up with very different results. In 2017, Colin Carlson, an ecologist with an interest in modeling the extinction risk for species, published a paper in Conservation Biology that placed the likelihood of the thylacine still surviving at 1 in 1.6 trillion. The likely extinction date was sometime between 1936 and 1943, he wrote, with the most optimistic scenario suggesting that it did not persist beyond the 1960s. The search for the thylacine, much like similar efforts to rediscover the ivory-billed woodpecker and other recently extinct charismatic species, is likely to be fruitless, Carlson and his co-authors wrote. But specialists in Australian wildlife said Brooke's paper was a worthwhile contribution to thylacine science. Bill Lawrence and James Cook of the University of Queensland, and who led the expedition to Cape New York, the northernmost tip of the Australian continent, to search for the thylacine and other mammals in 2017, said the question of when or if the thylacine went extinct depends on the data of an uncertain quality. At least what Barry has tried to do is take a shot at trying to quantify the probability, and that sounds like the eminently sensible thing to do, he said. Lawrence pointed out the number of supposedly extinct species have subsequently been rediscovered, including the coelacanth, the wallamy pine, the mountain pygmy possum, and the solenodon. I think it's really important to maintain that frame of mind where you expect some surprises. You try to be rigorous when you go about your science and be upfront with your uncertainties, Lawrence said. Jack Ashby, assistant director of the Museum of Zoology at the University of Cambridge in the UK, and an expert on Australian mammals, described the Tasmanian Thylacine Sighting Records Database as an extraordinary resource. They have put together every possible sighting that has been recorded and gone far beyond what government maintains, he said. It's fantastically exciting for the future of thylacine science. Others are less sure about whether the use of these sightings records is appropriate. Nick Mooney, a former wildlife manager at the DPIPWE, and a well-known conservationist and writer, said in a telephone interview that in his experience, people were very likely to see a Tasmanian species, such as a wallaby, and imagine what they believed to be a thylacine. Observers also commonly greatly underestimated the distance at which they saw the creature. Mooney investigated the most well-known and arguably most credible thylacine sighting in the past half century. On a rainy night in 1982, park ranger Hans Narding was sleeping in his vehicle when he woke up to find one right in front of him. He was unable to take a photograph, but reported watching it for 3 minutes. Because Narding was a wildlife expert, and the consensus is that he could not have been mistaken, it was either genuine, an outright fabrication, or possibly, though this is somewhat countered by the length of time Narding said the encounter lasted, an illusion or waking dream. As a result, it's very hard to reach any conclusion about its accuracy, Mooney said. He has, however, heard one account dating back to 1973 from a friend that he does believe. In fact, Brooke hasn't even included all the sightings of recent years, according to Warren Dara of the Thylacine Research Unit. Some of the sightings they hear about are put on their website, but the best ones we keep under our hat, Dara said. I would reckon there are about a half dozen high-quality sightings not included in the Brooke paper, he added, including three from 2020. Despite these reports, Dara and his colleagues within the TRU start from the premise that the thylacine is probably extinct. Brooke said his paper showed the value of assembling, curating, and maintaining a database of not just scientific records, but sightings by the public. Scientific records, including visual evidence such as camera trap data, have the advantage of being more likely to be correct, but they can never match the quantity supplied by the lay observers and witnesses. It emphasizes that if you can gather and encourage best use citizen science data, then it's helpful for the species that's on the brink of extinction, Brooke said. We want people to think that if you're reporting a sighting, you are not going to be laughed at, you're not going to be believed or disbelieved. It will be taken into account in a rigorous and fair way, and I think that's a good message to communicate to people. Brooks also rejects the criticism that the hunt for the thylacine diverts resources and attention away from animals that are more deserving of conservation action. Charismatic species can help attract funding for work that would not otherwise have happened, he said. Brooke gives the thylacine about a 1 in 10 probability of still surviving. With camera traps increasingly used by scientists and groups such as the Thylacine Research Unit, he says it's almost now or never for this species. If it hasn't been seen or photographed in the next decade, then we can really close the book on the thylacine, Brooke said. Never before have we had such an excellent opportunity to detect it.
They say you don't gotta go home, but you can't stay here.